Elaine, I love you.
I love you too.
It's so good to have you back with me, and I have a doozy of a case for you today.
I am so excited. It's been a bit.
It has been a bit. How have you been?
I've been pretty good. Been real cold.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. There was a period last week. I didn't go outside for probably 5 days.
Oh, yeah. Same. Yeah, I was getting a little stir crazy. We also accidentally froze the pipe that the washing machine drains into.
Oh, no. But you didn't accidentally do that. That was nature, baby.
Well, that's true. It was nature. Because we have our washing machine in a little room that's off of the garage, and it is freezing in there. So now we're running a space heater.
Just be careful with that space heater. Make sure you shut it off.
Oh, I know. We do. Yeah. Only running it during the day, and then we unplug it at night. So
good. You know how I am about these heating systems. Well, what do you think? Should we dive into this?
Yes, I am ready.
Okay. Well, you know what, Elaine? Oftentimes when I don't know where to start with a case, I start at the beginning.
That's a great place to start.
Yeah. Thank you. And the first place I want to start is with a thought.
Okay.
Okay. Coincidences.
Okay.
Now, a coincidence is defined by Oxford Dictionary as a remarkable occurrence of events or circumstances without apparent casual connection. So the idea of coincidences is going to be very prevalent in the case I'm about to tell you today.
Oh.
And I'm going to tell you right now, as I start this off, as many of the other cases we do, you are not going to believe where this is going.
Okay. I'm very intrigued.
All right. So should I get into it?
Yes. Jump in at the beginning.
Okay, Elaine, we're going back to the year 2000, which is 24 years ago, if you can believe it.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. 24 years ago, and we're going to Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. And our story is going to begin with Mary Morris, okay? Mary Morris is a 48-year-old woman. She lives in Bayford. Or is it Bayview? Baytown! It's Baytown. Baytown is a suburb, from what I understand, not far outside of Houston, okay?
Okay.
So Mary Morris, she worked, 48 years old. She worked as a bank loan officer for Spring Valley Chase Bank in Houston. So she made the commute from her home in Baytown to Houston to work every day. And she's married to a man by the name of Jay Morris. Okay. Now, Mary has a daughter by the name of Marilyn, but Jay is Marilyn's stepdad because both of them had prior relationships.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, October 12th, 2000 was a Thursday, and Mary was last seen at 6 o'clock a.m. that morning. Now, she... this was, from what I understand, her normal time leaving for work. But a couple sources I listened to and read about said that this was a little earlier than she usually goes to work because she had a lot to do that day. Okay.
Okay. Reasonable.
So she's, yeah. So she's last seen at 6 a.m. leaving her home, and everything was completely normal. And, you know, the most abnormal of days often start out normal.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So she kisses her husband, Jay, goodbye. She leaves for work. Okay. Mm-hmm. She never shows up at work.
Oh.
Which, this is going to be really strange. Okay. And we're going to have to come back to some details. But her husband, Jay, thought it was a little strange that he hadn't heard from Mary because they typically talked at least a few times a day.
Oh.
Which surprised me because I'm like, I mean.
Yeah, I don't think we were texting in the year 2000. So are they calling I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I got the sense that, well, they had cell phones, right? But I got the sense that.
I don't remember.
No, they did. I'm telling you they did.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't, from what I'm understanding, and actually, according to her daughter, Marilyn, I listened to an interview, and Marilyn says her mother did have a cell phone, but she, you know, in her words, her mother was a cheap person, and it charged her by the minute, you know, to use the phone. So she only kept it for emergencies.
Oh, okay.
So I'm assuming that when she would speak to Jay, her husband, it was, you know, via a work phone, just to check in or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So she leaves for work. She never shows up to work. Okay. And Jay finds it odd that he hasn't heard from her, but he knew she was supposed to be busy that day. So he didn't like worry too much about it. He went about his daily life. One source I read said around 2 o'clock, somebody called the home that Mary lived at with Jay. Mm-hmm. And Jay picks up, and the person on the other end says, "Is Mary there?" And Jay says, "No, she's at work." Mm-hmm. Okay. What's really weird about this is the person that called was Mary's supervisor.
Oh. Did Jay know that?
No.
Oh.
So what's weird about this is that Jay does not say who's calling or ask who's calling. Uh-huh. And once Jay says, "No, she's not here, she's at work," the supervisor does not then say, "No, actually, I'm her supervisor and she's not here."
That's so weird.
Yeah, this has been heavily debated amongst anyone that like is familiar with this case, because some people are like, I mean, most people are like, "That's odd." But then some people are like, "Okay, well, maybe like the work is like covering for her. Maybe she's like cheating on him or something, and they don't want to." You know, I'm not saying that was the case, but they don't want to like get into the business and like create tension.
Yeah, I guess I could see that argument. Yeah. Like maybe they're worried there's a reason she lied to her husband and they don't want to expose that if they don't know the whole story.
I could see that. I mean, but yeah, so a lot of people find that odd. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the phone call ends with no alarms still being raised, except maybe at work. I mean, her coworkers were worried because they said it was really unusual for her not to show up. She was very reliable. She didn't miss work. And if she was going to, she was somebody who would definitely, you know, let them know. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Jay starts to get worried around 5 o'clock because Mary's not coming home from work and he still hasn't heard from her. So he decides to call work to see if she's still there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's at that point that whoever picks up at her job says, "No, she didn't ever show up today."
Oh.
So now Jay's worried, okay?
Yeah.
And Jay ends up calling Mary's daughter, Marilyn, and letting her know what's going on.
Where is the daughter? Does she not live with them?
No, she does not live. She's an adult, I believe.
Oh, okay.
At this point. Yeah. I don't know exactly where the daughter lived, but I mean, in the Texas area or in the Houston area, from what I understand.
Okay. That makes sense.
Okay. All right. Now, rewind back to 10 o'clock that morning. Okay.
Okay.
So this is 4 hours after Mary has left for work. At 10:20 a.m., residents in the area report smoke in the distance.
Oh.
So
in the area of the home?
Not in the immediate.
Just in the city?
Correct. Or
in the suburb? Okay.
Yeah, correct. Like off in the distance. It wasn't like immediately near anyone's house. Okay. But it was just people noticed the smoke billowing.
Yeah.
Well, somebody calls this in to the fire department.
Good.
Okay. Now, this is weird. So the fire department blows it off, from what I understand, because where the smoke was coming from was on county property.
Okay.
But the call came into the city. And they said, well, you know, somebody is burning brush or something, like whatever. So they do not go check it out.
Okay.
Okay. It's not till a man riding an ATV on a remote road later that day finds a Chevy Lumina.
Oh, no.
Which was the car that Mary Morris drove. And I should have said that earlier. But yeah, she drove a Chevy Lumina.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, the man looks inside and sees a body in the car.
Oh, no.
Now, the car is on fire.
Yeah.
Hence the smoke. And it looked like it had been burning for some time. You know, as I said, 10:20 in the morning is when we have the first report of somebody reporting that they see smoke. This right. is much later. This is much later in the day. The car is still smoldering. Okay.
Wow.
Now, at some point, Jay and Marilyn drive out there. And there are police on the scene. And they're trying to get information out of the police. But the police are like, you know, we're investigating this. Get out of here, basically.
Yeah.
You know, in a nicer way.
Yeah.
Finally, after some pressuring, they say, yes, you know, we did find a car and it's on fire. But we don't know what's going on yet. We don't know if there's a body. We don't know anything.
Right.
So they go back home. And later that night, police come by, detectives come by, and they do say, we found the car. There is a body inside. They presume it to be Mary because she's missing, number one. And number two, it's her car, right?
Yeah.
So, the you know, Marilyn, her daughter, is devastated by this news.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Some very interesting things about the crime scene. Mary was in the passenger seat of her car when she was found.
Oh.
And all of her jewelry was on her, except for her wedding ring.
Weird.
And also missing from her car was her purse.
Okay.
Now, investigators could not tell how Mary died because her body was burnt that badly.
Wow.
I heard, or when I was doing research about this case, that it was exceptionally hot to the point her tires and engine had melted. And you could not even, sorry to be graphic, but her skull was ashes.
Wow.
So they could not determine how she was actually killed.
So I wonder, is this not normal? Like, I don't know how hot cars burn when they're on fire, but I wonder if this is, or like how hot bodies burn when they're on fire. Is there like a reason that this was so melted in one day?
Yes, and I will, and I'm going to get back to why.
Oh, okay.
But you are on to something there, because
it
is not normal.
Oh.
But stay tuned. I'm going to come back to that, okay?
Okay. And obviously, they know that there's some sort of foul play, because if she was in the passenger seat, it's not like it was an accidental crash or the car accidentally started on fire.
Oh, yeah. Plus, you know, if that happens, there's going to be some sign of maybe you trying to get the hell out of there.
Right, right.
Okay, yeah. Couple more quick details, and then I'm going to get on to the next part of this. But now, the area where Mary's car was found was in a very remote area, surrounded by a lot of foliage.
Okay.
And like I said, it was come upon by this ATV rider who called 911 when they found it. Now, this area, this road that she's found on, is 3 miles away from her home in the opposite direction of where she would be headed if she was going to work.
Okay.
What's even more strange is we're told she left for work at 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Yet this fire is reported at 10:20 a.m. Now, it's possible that, you know, the fire was burning for a while and just went unnoticed, or nobody called it in until 10:20 a.m.
That's very possible.
Right. But also, that's 4 hours. That's over 4 hours. So right. What did Mary do between the time she left for work and between the time she left for work and the time that the fire was first noticed?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it's a little weird. 4 hours, I feel like it would have been noticeable before then. But again, maybe somebody like saw it and didn't really care because it's common to burn brush in the area. I don't know.
I think that's very possible. If I'm in a rural area and there's a lot of farmland and I see a billow of smoke, I do kind of assume that they're burning something on purpose. And I don't think
it's a chance of it. Yeah, you don't really think that's not where your mind goes right away.
Right.
All right.
But what happened in the up to 2 hours or up to 4 hours before mm-hmm. they saw the smoke? Like, when did it actually happen? I wonder.
Right. Oh, yeah, totally. All right. So a few days later, so this all happens on the 12th of October. Okay.
Okay.
On October 16th, by now the body has been identified as being 100% confirmed Mary Morris.
Okay.
And October 16th, 4 days later, Marilyn and Jay have a funeral for mm-hmm. Mary. Okay. They bury her. And it's at this point that Marilyn gives the coroner a call. She wants to see if it's possible to get some of her mother's jewelry back, you know, as they were, you know, prepping her and everything, and they had her had buried. So she's calling to see if she can get her mother's items back.
Sure.
And the coroner goes, yeah, of course. We will make sure we get that back to you after the funeral.
Okay.
No, Elaine, they just had the funeral.
Oh.
They said, yeah, they said we're still preparing her body for the funeral.
What? But
Marilyn's like, what? We just had the funeral.
He must have just been looking at a different name or something.
Right.
Like a different, yeah. He just made a mistake.
So, but no, because Marilyn started to freak out a little bit because they just had this funeral.
Yeah.
And they just buried her mother.
Yeah.
But if you recall, she was very, very badly burned. So she's like, oh my God, like, was that even my mom?
Yeah. Did we bury the wrong person? The wrong body?
So after being put on hold and transferred a little bit, it was finally determined what was causing so much confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Another woman by the name of Mary Morris was murdered that day, 4 days after the first Mary Morris.
What?
She was also found in her car, murdered.
What? In the same area? Like that? So like both of them, this was close enough. They both were going to the same mortuary too.
They were found 25 miles apart.
What?
So now we get into the story of Mary McGinnis Morris. The first Mary I was telling you about, we're going to call her from this point forward, Mary Lou Morris. This is the first Mary Morris.
Okay.
So we're talking now about Mary McGinnis Morris. Okay. This is the second Mary Morris that's been murdered in the Houston area within 4 days. Okay.
Very coincidental.
Very much so. Okay. Mm-hmm. This Mary Morris was 39 years old and she was a nurse practitioner. She lived in Sugar Land, Texas, which is also a suburb of Houston, but on the other side of Houston. So when I'm looking at a map, Baytown is on the east side and Sugar Land is on the west side. both kind of in the Houston area, but not necessarily like right next to each other.
Okay.
All right. Now, Mary McGinnis Morris, she had some stuff going on in her life. In other words, there's a little more here to speculate about.
Okay.
Where do we even start? Okay. So Mary McGinnis Morris, she was married to Mike Morris, and they at the time had a 15-year-old daughter, Katie.
Okay.
There's a few issues going on. First, you have the husband. Okay. Their relationship was not great.
Oh.
But it's kind of disputed exactly to what extent. Okay. Family said they argued a lot. At one point, Mike, her husband, accused Mary of having an affair with a family friend. Now, they both, the family friend and Mary, told Mike that nothing was going on.
Okay.
And he says he believed them. He said they looked him in the eyes, they said so, and he believed them.
Okay.
However, family discredits this and say he was still suspicious and sometimes would even follow her.
Yeah.
So.
Makes sense.
Now, perhaps he had a reason to be concerned because Mary confided in her sister that she did love someone else.
Oh, no.
But it's unclear to me if she actually was, you know, cheating, like in actively cheating on her husband, or if she just had feelings for someone. But she did tell her sister, I don't want to end things with Mike. I want to make it work. Okay. Not sure how that's going to work out, but that's what she confides in her sister. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Mary McGinnis, she also had some stuff going on at work.
Okay.
Early in the year 2000, there's this temporary employee that starts there. His name is Dwayne Young. And he just does not like Mary. He's a nurse, okay? He starts as a nurse.
Yeah.
And he just didn't like her. I can't find a reason why. And perhaps I need to dive deeper on this, but I just know that he just didn't like her. He was constantly going to management and trying to discredit her.
Wow. And
he seemed very, like, he got agitated easily. So he was just making life hard and annoying for Mary.
Okay.
All right. So there's an incident shortly before Mary McGinnis Morris, we're talking about Mary too now, is killed. Okay. She goes to work and she finds her desk completely rearranged and her photos of her family face down.
What the heck?
So she goes, I guess, over by this guy, Dwayne Young. She goes over by his desk and notice on his, like, he had one of those desk calendars.
Yeah.
He wrote on the desk calendar, death to her.
What?
Yeah.
But he wrote death to her?
Correct.
What? Why would he write that?
I don't know. It seems like he's a little unhinged, Elaine.
Yeah.
To if say
I'm planning to kill someone, I'm not going to write it on my calendar at work.
I know. Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to see. Yeah, so this is the Thursday before she's killed, okay?
Okay.
That she finds this.
Was and it a specific date or was it just written?
No, all I've seen in the sources is that it was written on his desktop calendar. But I would be interested if it was associated with a specific date or if it was just kind of like in the margin somewhere.
Yeah.
Like to do. Buy eggs. It's not funny because somebody's dead and I honestly feel horrible, but you know what I'm saying? It's just like, I agree. It's just like so absurd. That's what's like,
it is
almost, if it weren't for the fact that this woman was murdered, it would be funny. in an absurd sort of way. You get what I'm saying.
This would show up in a dark comedy series on TV.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's crazy.
So she obviously goes to management right away about this. Now, I keep finding conflicting reports about this. I've read that management sided with Mary in their little feud or whatever. And like, this pissed Dwayne off. So he actually put in his 2-week notice. But I've also heard that he was let go for this incident. Because they told her, because this was this incident where she finds her desk all messed up and this note. She is told by management, don't come in the next day. We're going to handle it. Basically, like they're going to let him go. So I can't find, somebody's got to know this. Like, was he fired? Did he quit? But one report that I read is that the next day after this happens, Dwayne comes to the office to make sure his time card is signed and that allegedly he made a scene like banging on the windows and saying he demanded to speak with Mary, but he denies or some people like it's really weird. So like, I think he denies that this happened. Either way, they asked him not to return and he's not there anymore. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Well, this incident obviously really spooked her.
Yeah.
So she went to her husband and she said, "This, you know, this is getting out of control. I need a gun. I want you to get me a gun that I can use for my protection."
Okay.
So he does. He gets her a gun. He shows her how to use it. Mike, her husband.
Yeah.
And then he puts it under the seat in her car. So she has it on her. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
We're going to find out later that she's going to be killed with her own gun.
Oh.
But I'm skipping ahead. Okay. All right. So let's get to the day that Mary is murdered. And this is October 16th. Okay. Which, like we said, is 4 days after Mary Lou Morris was killed. Same day of her funeral. This other Mary is killed.
Huh.
So this is a Sunday. Now Mary has some errands to run. Mm-hmm. We're talking again, Mary McGinnis Morris. Mary too. Since she's a nurse practitioner, she met her friend Lori at a clinic and gave her a flu shot. And then she was going to run to like the post office and a drugstore, right?
Uh-huh.
So she goes to this drugstore called Eckert's or something.
Okay.
And she calls her friend Lori and reports to Lori that some guy in the drugstore was really creeping her out.
Oh.
It's unclear to me what this person was doing, if they were following her or whatever. But she said, there's a guy in here that's really creeping me out. She suspected that it may have been someone that knew this Dwayne Young guy, who was the problematic guy at work, but it was not him from what I'm understanding. Again, there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah. Like why would she speculate that he knew him?
Well, I read something that was like, she might've met him at a Christmas party or something.
Oh,
like that. Okay. Her and her husband had it attended like in relation to work. I don't know. It's very confusing. Again, maybe I could do a part two on this if I could find definitive information. But I'm doing the best I can. Please.
Well, anyway. This was 24 years ago and you weren't on the investigation team. So you're doing pretty well.
Thanks, Elaine. I appreciate that. Anyway, Lori, her friend, the way she describes this phone call from Mary is not that Mary's scared for her life. It's more like she was a little sketched out, but she wasn't like actively like, oh my God. She was more just like, dude, there's this creepy dude, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Verbatim, that's probably what she said. Dude, there's this creepy dude.
Dude. Probably.
Anyway, I know we're giggling a little bit. It's about to get real dark up in here because she tells Lori, okay, she's just going to go back to the clinic. She's going to turn off her computer, sign out, and go home.
Okay.
Which I don't know why she didn't sign. This is another thing people are like, why didn't she sign out before she ran her errands? Unless she was planning on coming back, doing some more work, but then she changed her mind.
Probably, I bet.
That makes the most sense to me, but, you know.
Yeah.
Don't want to assume because you never know.
Right.
Anyway, so she tells Lori she's going to go sign out and go home. 12 minutes later, a call is going to come into 911.
Oh.
Now, this call was placed by Mary herself.
Oh.
And it's never been released. But the detectives who listened to it said it was horrible. You could hear her being killed.
Oh, my God.
So Mary was able to get out that she was abducted by somebody. Somebody had her. And she reported that she didn't know who this person was. And I don't know if this is because this person was masking themselves somehow or if she didn't recognize them.
Sure.
But her murder was captured on this call. And detectives will not release it, and they have not released the transcript. But her daughter has heard the call.
Oh, God.
And,
that would be horrifying.
It's said to be just horrible.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, I can't even imagine being a loved one and hearing that. Mm. It's crazy, man. It's like, where do I even go next? So, much like the other Mary Morris, the first Mary, Mary Lou, Mary McGinnis, her car was found in a rural area as well. Like I said, it was 25 miles away from where the other one was found. Okay. But her car is found in a separate rural road. Mary had been severely beaten. There was evidence that she had been gagged and bound.
Oh.
And despite this, I mean, so then she was killed by a single gunshot wound to her head.
Okay. So her car was not on fire.
It was not.
Okay.
Despite this, investigators said the scene was staged to like sort of look like a suicide.
Oh.
But they ruled it out because there was blood, like, on the inside of the car, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, like, the passenger door was left open.
Oh.
And she was killed with her own gun.
Yeah.
Which is another strange thing. There's so much to go over here, Elaine. There's so much to analyze. But it's just like... Yeah. So... Now let's get into... Her husband. This is weird. Okay.
Okay.
About an hour and a half to 2 hours after that 911 call comes in, a 4-minute call comes in to Mary's cell phone from Mike. Okay.
Okay.
4 minutes.
Like 4 minute, like it had been answered. He didn't leave a voicemail for 4 minutes.
So there's the thing. He claims that he called and let it ring. But the phone company says that the call was answered.
What?
And this is an hour and a half to 2 hours after she calls 911 to report she's been abducted.
Oh, God, that's creepy. Well, you're not just going to let the phone ring for 4 minutes.
That's what he claims. Now, he has an alibi, allegedly, that he was at the movies with his daughter, Katie.
Okay.
And people always say this when they're talking about this case. He refused a lie detector test, and he refused to let them interview his daughter without an attorney. Now, a lot of people say this is smart.
Yeah, that seems reasonable to me.
If they're trying to build a case against him, yeah. I mean, I would get why you wouldn't, one, take a lie detector test and let them interview your 15-year-old daughter, who's probably impressionable.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that, but I just wanted to bring that up because people do point that out. And his reason for not taking a lie detector test is because supposedly he was on anxiety medication and he was concerned that it would affect the test somehow, which I get that. I mean, they're not admissible in court. They're more right. of an investigative tool. You know sure. what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So obviously the, you know, first of all, let's talk about this theory that perhaps it was a hit gone wrong. And people are so divided on this. Like, people think maybe the first Mary Lou Morris was killed by someone who wanted to kill Mary McGinnis, and they screwed up royally.
Well, so that was my first impression, that this was a hit gone wrong, that it was, they've killed the wrong Mary Morris first.
There are valid arguments to support both sides. And that's where I tell you, was this a coincidence, or was this, you know, was this actually, are they related in some way? Okay. So let's talk. Go ahead.
Sorry. But it just, it feels like, so the top suspects feel like that guy she worked with, mm-hmm. And he didn't blow up and get fired until the day of the murder, right?
No, this was the week before.
Oh.
Or no, not a whole week, but it was like shortly before.
Oh. So it could have been, if it was him or he hired the creepy guy in the drugstore, that,
Yeah. So why don't we talk about, let's talk about first, I have more details that I need to share with you.
Okay.
But let's first talk about the possibility that this could have been a hit gone wrong and what supports that theory. Is that okay if we go there first?
Let's start there. I'm trying to formulate my thoughts here, but there's a lot.
There is a lot. First, I want to show you a picture of both the Marys side by side. Okay. Can you see?
Yes. Wow. Okay.
So on the left, you have Mary Lou Henderson Morris, who was 48 years old at the time she was killed.
Okay.
On the right, you have Mary McGinnis Morris, who was 39 years old at the time she was killed. Now, the reason I show you this picture is because descriptively, they look similar. I mean, they look
very similar.
I wouldn't necessarily say they look super alike, but they both have kind of curly brown short hair, you know.
Yeah,
above the shoulder.
It's a very similar hairstyle. Their eyes are actually pretty similar.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah. Now,
combine that with the fact they're both in the Houston area.
Mm-hmm.
And if for anybody that's listening and they're like, oh my God, blah, 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 just hold on. I'm going to get to the stuff that, you know, goes against this too.
Okay.
Right now, I'm just saying why you could think, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. They're only 9 years apart in age.
Right. Right.
So Mary Lou Morris looks a little older in the photo, but I'm sure in person. Because the second photo of the second Mary is just a little bit fuzzier, so you can't really see if she's got wrinkles. There's wrinkles more apparent on the first one. But no, honestly, they're fairly similar looking people, especially the hair.
So, same name, same state, same general area in terms of Houston, you know, and the surrounding area. Both women were found dead in their cars. Both murders were violent in nature. We do not know how Mary Lou Morris was killed. We know that her body was burned. And then Mary McGinnis Morris, we know she was, you know, beaten, you know, gagged, a number of things before she was eventually shot.
Wow.
So violent, both met violent ends in their cars. Both similar in appearance, at least in the descriptive sense, like we said.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Now, Jay was initially ruled out. Jay being Mary Lou's husband.
Right.
And by all accounts, she had a happy marriage and, you know, there were no major problems. She was liked by her coworkers. She seemed to be a happy, outgoing person.
Sure.
Let's talk about a few more details in the case of Mary Lou Morris, the first Mary that was killed. Okay. Now, 6 months after she's killed, Jay, her husband, receives bills for a calling card in Mary's, like from Mary's phone card.
Oh.
They were able to trace this back to a 16-year-old from Galveston, Texas.
Okay.
Which is not super close to Houston, you know.
Uh-huh.
So they go to this girl and they talk to her about the calling card. She says she finds a purse abandoned in a parking lot at a convenience store in Galveston.
Oh.
And inside the purse is the calling card. So she gives the purse to a friend of hers that's a neighbor and keeps the calling card for herself.
Okay.
So they go to the neighbor and they track down the purse. And I'm interested to what you think about this. None of her family recognizes this purse. And I guess in particular, her husband does not recognize the purse as being Mary's.
None of Mary's family recognizes it.
No, but that's what I heard. But also in the interview with Marilyn, Mary's daughter, she says she didn't know because they didn't live, you know, together. Yeah,
I could see that.
So would Josh know, your husband, would he know what purses belong to you or not? If somebody found a purse somewhere, would he be able to say, oh, yeah, that's my wife's purse?
Men, I don't want to make a generalization here, but a lot of men I know are not super into, I'm trying to say this nicely, not like super in tune with details or like notice things that are not theirs. Like they're kind of oblivious about some things if it's not like, At least in my experience. So I only use one purse 95% of the time. And I set it down in the same spot every single day. So I'm pretty confident my husband would be able to pick mine out in a lineup. But if she's the type of woman who uses, like some women have a collection of purses and switch them out fairly often, maybe he wouldn't recognize it. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that Wesley would definitely recognize it for me.
Yeah.
Because you probably, just who he is.
You put it in the same spot probably every day. And then when you guys go out, he sees you carry it. Like it's a noticeable part of you and your life. Yeah. Yeah. But like, what if you were the type of person who has a collection of purses and then you use a different one depending on your outfit? Maybe you wouldn't.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that people have debated about. But still, like, whether the purse is hers or not, her calling card was there. So did somebody steal her stuff and switch the purse?
That doesn't make sense.
And then they abandoned it at this convenience store. And then this girl, so this is kind of annoying, but the girl that finds the purse, you know, she gives she takes the calling card and gives the purse to a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
The one who got the purse throws out the other contents.
Oh.
So that's another unclear thing. Like what else was in the purse, right?
Right.
But we do know that Mary's purse was missing from her person when she was found.
So was her husband at all surprised about there being a calling card, or was that the norm in 2000?
I got the sense that it was a norm.
Okay. But,
I mean, I could be wrong. But check this out. All right?
Uh-huh.
Around the same time that this whole thing, the bills come through for this calling card, right? Jay begins receiving fold calls. By the way, his number is not listed, but he's getting phone calls. Okay. Wow.
Okay.
From people asking for Mary, his wife.
Oh, that's creepy.
Who's been dead for 6 months.
They're not like telemarketers?
I don't think so.
Mm.
Now, as he's caught off guard by this, Jay initially just tells them she's not here.
Right.
He doesn't provide any other details. Okay.
Yeah.
He ends up telling detectives about this, and they say, you know what? The next time this person calls back and asks for Mary, tell them she can be reached at this number. And the detective says, call, give them my number.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it happens. He calls Jay. This person calls Jay and asks for Mary.
Okay.
And Jay follows the detective's advice and says, yeah, she can be reached. And he starts giving the number.
Okay.
The caller cuts him off as he's giving the number and says, yeah, right. And hangs up.
What? That's creepy.
Yep. I just got chills.
Yeah.
This same. Person never called again.
What?
And detectives were actually able to trace these phone calls to a Baytown apartment. They have the road that the apartment was on.
Oh.
But they say there's no further leads.
Oh. Wow. Okay.
All right, let's go to this detail.
Okay.
That, again, has been disputed. Okay?
Okay.
The newspaper, the Houston Chronicle, right?
Yeah.
Allegedly, between the time that Mary Lou Morris is killed on October 12th and the time that Mary McGinnis Morris is killed on October 16th, between that time, allegedly somebody called into the Houston Chronicle and all they said was they got the wrong Mary Morris and hung up.
Whoa.
Now,
what?
Lori, remember Lori, who's Mary McGinnis Morris's friend that she gave the flu shot?
Yes.
Mary says this has been confirmed by somebody at the newspaper.
Oh.
Okay, but other investigations into this determined this didn't happen, and it was made up.
What?
So this call either happened or it didn't.
Why would that be unclear?
I ain't got no idea.
That's weird.
So all of those things combined, you know, a lot of people say that this was a hit gone wrong. I mean, it is a little uncanny. The similar appearance, the names, the manners in which they were found, but let's go into now some other information that I uncovered, and we're going to talk then about how maybe this is just a coincidence.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
When I was listening to Marilyn give her interview, which the podcast is, let me just make sure I credit the right podcast. It's called Citizen Detective.
Oh.
They did a great long episode on this, almost 3 hours long.
Wow.
And they talked to Marilyn, Mary Lou Henderson, the first Mary's daughter.
Okay.
As she's going through everything, I get the sense, and she did not say this directly, but I get the sense she is suspicious of her stepdad, Jay.
Really? Why do you get that impression?
For a few reasons. Well, outside of what Marilyn said, okay. So Mary Lou and Jay were horse people. They liked horses.
Okay.
Did you know that horse manure can be used as an extremely powerful accelerant?
Oh, no.
Well, it can, and there was evidence found that that's what may have been used.
Oh. Did they own horses?
I think they did, yes.
Oh.
And.
Weird.
This is where Marilyn comes in. The day that Mary goes missing and then her car is eventually found burning. Apparently, Jay was going to look at a horse. Now, the reason I think Marilyn is suspicious of Jay is because she mentions in this episode that if Jay wanted, like, Mary and Jay lived right near the I-10 freeway.
Okay.
And if they wanted to get anywhere, they could just hop on the freeway and go to anywhere they want. But apparently, he took a series of back roads to get to this horse wherever.
Yeah.
Which would have taken him near the car.
Oh.
But he never mentioned seeing a car, her car, or anything like that.
Or smoke. Or yes. Anything.
Yes.
Odd.
Very odd. Okay.
Huh.
So there's that. And after Mary's death, apparently, well, number one, investigators didn't search the home.
Oh.
And the reason for this is, I don't know why, but if you think about it, Mary and Jay lived alone in that house together. The only reason we have the detail that Mary left for work at 6 a.m. is because of what he said. Did she leave for work at all?
Okay.
Did she leave the house alive?
That's fair. It is odd that they didn't investigate the house at all. Typically, when someone is murdered, I mean, isn't the spouse usually the number one suspect?
I have that right in my notes. Yes, it is. But I also read that they cleared him. There was no infidelity. Marilyn acknowledged she didn't know of any infidelity. Her mother had never confided in her that she was seeing someone else or that he was seeing someone else.
Mm-hmm.
She said they may bicker here and there, but other than that, they had a loving relationship. So I don't know exactly how it was ruled out, but he was ruled out.
Interesting.
Now, another piece of information that I'll just say this and I'll shut up and I'll let you talk.
Okay.
Marilyn, her daughter, says a couple months after Mary is killed, Mary Lou, Jay starts dating a woman from Russia that he met online. And within the year, he's remarried to her and she is in the States.
Wow.
Now, a lot of people think, was this going on before your wife was killed? Or did you just happen to start this conversation online with this woman afterwards?
A couple months later?
Yep. And within the year, they're married. Within a year. I don't like it, Elaine.
I don't know. I don't know a lot of widows or widowers who are in the right headspace to start dating within a couple months.
Now, you could argue he did this to, like, keep himself
tragic. Like, I know, but so tragic. It wasn't like an illness. And they knew it was coming.
Now, I know. But also, is this a coping mechanism? Is this a way to distract himself from his own grief? Is this a way to, like, be less lonely in the aftermath of your wife's death? Despite how it looks, is this something he's companionship? Is that what he's seeking?
Yeah, you could be right.
I mean, I don't like it. I'm just saying, like, is that possible? People handle grief and life in different ways, you know?
You're right.
Maybe this was just a distraction for him.
I think that's a fair argument. That could, it's not a crazy theory.
Also, it's important to note that Mary Lou Morris, like I said, her and Jay were both previously married before they married each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Lou had a good relationship with her ex-husband, and he actually helped with the search that day.
Oh, good.
So I just wanted to throw that in there, like, in case it's like, oh, what about the ex?
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's, you know, that's, I think I covered everything, and I hope I covered everything because there's a lot, but that's what I have. And I'm going to stop talking again and let you say what you want to say. But I just want to wrap up with, I think a lot of the, like, I think a lot of the, when people look at this case, it's, they love it for the story. They love it for the, like, it's a plot of some crazy movie. This is like, this could be a plot of a movie.
Oh yeah. Definitely. And
they're intrigued by it because of that. And I'm intrigued by it because of that. But also I think it's important for people to remember that these were human beings, you know,
mm-hmm.
They were mothers, they had families, they had careers, they, you know, they were loved by a lot of people, and they were murdered. And that's horrible.
Yeah.
That their lives were taken in such a violent way. So.
It is. It's very disturbing. It is hard to frame this in reality. Especially when it's this kind of story.
Now, proponents of, or like, not proponents, people that think the hitman thing is, I forgot to go over this. People that think the hitman thing is BS, mm-hmm. point to the fact that, okay, hitmen are not just going to find somebody with a name and kill them. They're going to have more information than that. Usually True. They know where the person lives, where they work, what their habits are.
Yeah.
Now, you could argue that this isn't some professional hitman. Maybe this is just like somebody that's addicted to drugs and looking for some quick cash.
Yeah. Desperate for money.
Still, how do you screw up that bad? Okay. That's one thing.
Especially because they were 20 some miles apart on opposite sides of Houston, or the bodies were found 20 some miles, right? But they live in opposite sides of Houston. You'd think they'd at least go to the right town.
Right. You know? Also, what stands out to me, if this is a hit, both of these deaths seem incredibly violent.
Yes.
I don't know anything about this. I could just be talking out of my ass. But wouldn't you want to make it a little more clean? Wouldn't you want it? Like, why are you going to, especially Mary McGinnis Morris? Mm-hmm. She's gagged. She's bound. She's beaten.
A hitman would not go through all that.
Unless she fought.
Yes.
But, okay. But But also,
Elaine, gagged and beaten, that, like, you'd think a hitman would try to make it quick and get in and get out.
But also, Elaine, keep in mind that Mary McGinnis Morris is killed with her own gun. That would mean the hitman would have to have known she had the gun.
Yes.
And why would you risk having to, if your sole intent is to kill someone, why would you go, even if you knew she had the gun? Why would you go and risk that trying to get the gun in order to kill them? Like, wouldn't you want to bring your own weapon to make sure you were going to be able to do this?
Unless they brought their own weapon, and then in the course of torturing her and the time before she was dead, discovered that she had her own gun. And then he changed his mind and thought, well, if I use her gun instead of my own weapon, then I can frame it as a suicide. And mm-hmm. it was just kind of a lucky break on his part.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky with air quotes.
Yeah.
Couple thoughts.
Yeah.
So Mary is a really common name.
Very true.
Especially, like, at that time, my mom's name is Mary. She was in her 40s. So I think in that generation, it was a very common name.
Elaine, I'm not to kick you up, not to cut you off, but yes, you are right. I actually looked into this, and Mary was the number one name for that generation.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that's not surprising. And Morris, did you look up how common the last name Morris is?
I actually got this information from the same podcast I referenced earlier, The Citizen Detective. And okay. I think they said something, I don't want to screw this up, so don't quote me on this, but I think they said Morris was the 800th something most common name in the world.
Oh, wow.
Which sounds like, okay, 800, but
in the world, that's, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in the world, so, but yes. Basically their whole point was, yes, this is a common name.
Yes, so that definitely, that could point to it just being a coincidence. The similar hairstyle, probably common in that age group and in that time, in the year 2000. I don't remember hairstyles back then, but I wouldn't be surprised. It's not like a crazy unusual hairstyle. Not a crazy unusual hair color. Like, all of this could be coincidence. They weren't, like, there is nothing about either woman that was super notable or, you know, that made them, like, they both had like a large mole on their eye or something. Like, it's nothing notable like that. So I think it's fairly reasonable to say they could have been a coincidence. If it was a hit, so the first Mary Lou, we don't know how she was killed specifically because her body was so burned.
That's right.
Like, she could have very well been tortured in the same way. And this person had time to cover his tracks by burning the body and burning the car and getting rid of a lot of evidence. With the second Mary, Mary McGinnis, they knew she was making a 911 call and her death was on record. So they didn't have time. There were going to be people rushing. So all they could do was leave the scene and there was no time to try to burn the car. So that could account for the differences in how they found the bodies, if it was indeed a hit. Also, I think, I have no idea the actual statistics on this, so I'm just totally making this up, but I feel like if you want to hire a hitman, what does it take to hire an actually skilled, like an actually skilled, serious hitman who's good at that job and that's his actual primary job? I feel like that has to be extremely rare. That has to be something that happens in like major like drug organizations or something like that. I think if most people, like if there's just a crazy person off the street who gets it into his head that he wants to kill someone and he's going to hire a hitman, he's not going to find that highly skilled one. He is going to find someone who's desperate for money and doesn't know how to cover their tracks in a skilled way. And that's not going to be their primary job or whatever you would call it. So that would make sense. If it was a hit, it could have been someone who just screwed up because they don't actually know how to be a hitman. They were just desperate for money. But also, you hire a hitman wanting to kill someone and they accidentally kill the wrong person, you're still going to be like, oh, keep trying. I still really want this person dead. Like, wouldn't you give up at that point? Because now there's a tension potentially on your hitman or on the people sharing the same name. I don't know. It's hard for me to get into the head of someone who is psychopathic enough to want to murder someone else. So I don't know what motivates them. So I guess those are just, go ahead.
No, you go. You.
I was just going to say, those are just my initial thoughts. And how much did they investigate the guy from work, the nurse? Do you have any information on that? Like, was he a suspect? Was he like a primary suspect, or this was just a theory floating around, or did he get cleared?
I don't think they cleared anyone, to be quite honest with you. Not even a Mary McGinnis Morris's husband. There's a lot more suspicion, I think, on Mike Morris than there is on Jay Morris. Yeah. But as far as the only thing I could really find about Dwayne is that Dwayne, again, being the guy that was bothering her at work.
Yeah.
Was that he denied any, you know, he denied any involvement, of course. But I mean, it looks bad when you're writing death to her on your desk calendar. But also, I've also heard people make the argument that it is a big leap to go from, like, you hate this woman at work to, like, murdering her. But
yeah, there's plenty of people who just hate someone at their job. They're not going to murder them.
Yeah.
But if he's a psychopath, you know.
You know what I was thinking about when you were talking about, you know, a hit versus whatever.
Yeah.
The fact that the car was burnt and, you know, it seemed that Mary McGinnis had some signs of being tortured or, you know, bound and gagged, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It made me think of the Al Kite case, which we did a few episodes back. In the sense that we felt that the attack was so brutal and so horrible and, like, savage. Yes. We're like, well, this must have been a personal vendetta against him. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the other evidence where this guy, this supposed renter, right? He was scoping out other apartments too. Like, Al's place wasn't his only, wasn't the only apartment he had looked at in the course of, you know, his time his death.
And if he just had this feeling in him that he wanted to torture and murder a human, then it didn't really matter.
Which is crazy to think about. If you're interested in learning more about the Al Kite case, you can listen to episode 48. Elaine and I did a great episode with our friend Amber on that case. I recommend listening to it. Anyway, yeah, your comment about that just reminded me of that. Like, this could be, you know, it could be as simple as somebody just wanted to be awful.
Yeah, it exists. There's a show called Signs of a Psychopath. It's on one of the streaming services. I don't remember which. But they go through the stories of people who have been diagnosed as psychopaths who are in prison for having killed people. And several of them, like many of them, they're like, I just wanted to kill. I just wanted to see what it felt like. I wanted to see what the inside of a person looks like, or, you know, just creepy, creepy stuff. But that's just something that's broken in their brain. So it could have just been a random, I don't know. It's horrifying.
Yeah. I just looked up what you're talking about. Signs of a Psychopath. It looks like it's on HBO Max and Hulu.
Oh, okay. It is interesting if you are curious at all about psychopaths, because they have clips of professionals, like psychiatrists and people who study this, and they explain, like, common signs of a psychopath.
It is interesting. It's very fascinating. But it is
not a show that you can binge, because they're very horrifying stories. You get through one episode and then you kind of need a mental break. But it is
interesting. Yeah, need a brain break, put on some comedy or something. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
So, 24 years, unsolved. Let me ask you, And we can wrap it up soon. We've been on for a while now, so I want to be mindful of your time. But what do you think of the husband angle? That these were not related. It was just a coincidence that they had the same name. And perhaps Jay and Mike, separately, due to their own issues or motivation, killed their wives. I mean, I will say that's the most common, you know, thing in these cases is that the husband, you know, or spouse is the one that is responsible for this. But I'm not saying that's the case here. I'm just saying,
no, but statistically, we've
seen this before.
Yeah, it is most commonly the spouse. And there's a reason that they first look at the spouse. And yeah, obviously that's a realistic thing. And maybe we are overcomplicating it, but it does not, it's really hard to see what that motivation would have been, especially with Jay. Right. Like typically, yeah, they look at the spouse, but when it is the spouse, I feel like oftentimes they can point to some sort of infidelity or, you know, something that would have made them snap. And here we have nothing. Maybe.
Well,
you don't always know what's going on in people's private lives.
I do find it interesting about the accelerant being potentially the manure. Given that they both were involved with, like, horses. They were horse people.
But also, how common are horse people in that area of Texas?
That's a good point.
You know, how many horse farms are there in that area?
Good point. Yeah, for all we know, and, like, again, not to a victim blame or anything at all. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just simply throwing this out there. Could she have been seeing someone in complete secrecy?
Yeah.
Was she the one that, because at what point do things go wrong for her? If what Jay is saying is true and she leaves her house at 6 a.m., at what point does she end up in the opposite direction of where she is intending to go? You know, when does that person who killed her come into the picture? Do they, you know?
Yeah, if she did in fact leave for work at 6, then there's only 4 hours in which someone had to have caught her and then redirected her in the opposite direction and killed her and done all of that.
Right. And clearly they're trying to hide evidence by, by, you know, burning the car. But it's like, at what point, again, I'm not saying this is what happened, but it's almost like maybe she was meeting someone and things went wrong.
It's possible.
Or
very private.
Or is this whole she left for work at 6 a.m. thing complete BS and she was with Jay?
She could have been. And like, that means he could have killed her at any point from when she got home from work the night before.
Right.
And at least a lot wider window.
Right. Like I said, they lived there, just the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, again, it's not, I don't know anything. I'm throwing out scenarios.
No.
And I hate to do it like,
want to accuse someone who's innocent.
No, not at all. But I think
it's an angle that I'm sure has been explored by the police.
Yeah. And I think for Mary McGinnis, there's more to go off of on that. If somebody was like bothering her and following her, that's a very strong piece of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that it's like she didn't recognize who was abducting her, right?
Yeah.
Had it been her husband, she would have recognized that person, obviously. Now, did the husband have... Well, yeah, that's true.
But I don't know. I think if my husband had his face covered and was wearing a mask, I feel like I'd still... You know, this figure looks really familiar to me. I don't know if I could be totally... If it was my husband, I feel like I'd... I don't know.
Also,
they recognize Wes if he had a mask on. And it was like a situation where you got abducted. would you like be able to recognize, you know, like the way he walks and the way he moves and like his hands and stuff? I feel like.
Yeah, but do you have time to idea. Do you have time to like notice all that?
And maybe not. And obviously you would, if they were acting that way towards you, you would think, you wouldn't think that. Like, if someone is acting violently towards me, I wouldn't be like, oh, is this Josh?
Because yeah, they know exactly. I'd be like, oh, there he goes again.
Right.
What do you make of the 4-minute phone call where, what's his name? Mike says he calls the phone. She doesn't answer. And he lets it ring for 4 minutes.
That makes no sense at all. No one.
4 minutes is too long. That's too long.
Why was the voicemail not picking it up? Unless she didn't have a voicemail set up on her cell phone? I guess that's possible.
Yeah, he claims it's a glitch within the phone company. Whereas they say on their records, you can actually see the phone bill online. I'll try to find it and post it. But you can actually see it. And yeah, according to the phone company, the call was, quote, completed, meaning it was answered. A lot of people, you know what a lot of people think?
What?
A lot of people think that, what's his name? Mike had somebody do this, and him calling was to speak to the killer to make sure it was done.
Oh, that's scary. That could be. It didn't just ring unanswered for 4 minutes. I don't believe that at all.
4 minutes is a long time. I mean, no, we could sit here right now. I'm not going to do it because nobody wants to listen to that, but I could sit here and time 4 minutes of silence and you could just see for yourself how ridiculous that sounds.
That's ridiculous.
I could see 1 minute.
If even. I'm calling someone, yeah, 1 minute tops before I give up.
If they don't have a voicemail and it keeps ringing, I think after 6 rings or so, I'm like, okay, screw this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's just,
no chance.
It's very interesting. There's a number of things that could have happened here. I should mention there again, this is another thing that's kind of been like, I've heard different things, but allegedly, what's his name? Mike, I said that 3 times now. What's his name? Mike Morris allegedly had a life insurance policy on his wife in the amount of $700,000.
Oh,
but apparently his daughter, Katie, has come out and said that, well, he did have a life. There was a life insurance policy, but it was less than that.
Okay.
And she said that Mike did not receive it. She received it.
Oh.
So do with that what you will.
Unless he didn't realize it would go to her. But you'd think he would. He would realize that if he was killing for money. He would look into that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I have life insurance and my husband has life insurance. And I think it's fairly common for people to get life insurance on their spouse. Right. I mean, I didn't take it out on my husband. Like, we each got our own separately.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm reading this right now. Dwayne, the coworker, nor Mary's husband have been ruled out as suspects.
Wow.
Mary
McGinnis' husband, you mean?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
And the detective further states that the problem is that there is a lack of cooperation by the people closest to her.
Oh.
They say the husband has not helped out, and I don't know by that if they just mean the fact that he won't take a lie detector and he wouldn't let them speak to the daughter or whatever.
Right.
Here's a question. The gun.
Yes.
If Mike wanted her dead, why give her a gun to fight back? And the fact that she's killed with her own gun, that tells me, though,
they knew
about that. That bothers me, though. That bothers me. Because if I'm Mike and I want to kill my wife, am I going to send somebody and say she keeps a gun under the front seat I guess that's plausible. Like, she keeps a gun under the front seat. When you come upon her, go there.
Yeah.
But isn't it safer though to like have your own weapon? Or I guess make it look like she killed herself.
Yeah, because it was framed as if it was a suicide. Apparently not very well.
Yeah, then why go through the trouble of like gagging her? And maybe because she was calling the cops or trying to call the cops, or she was struggling, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel good about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they are connected at all, but it is a little crazy, I will say. Oh, one other thing. In the argument against a hitman, mm-hmm. so in the argument for a coincidence, it's also been mentioned that Houston is the fourth most populated city in the United States, just falling behind Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles.
Oh, that's interesting to note. Yeah.
So obviously there's going to be people with the same name when there you have that many people. But it's so weird to me, like the timing of it, the fact that they're close-ish,
mm-hmm.
and the way like they were found in their cars. I don't know, man. It's wild. But then Mary McGinnis just had so much going on in her life where it seems like it can't be, unless the husband is just completely like, God, please don't come and kill me, but like the world's biggest moron to carry out this hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like they looked in a phone book and picked one.
Right.
Like you need to know where they work and what, you know, you need something more than a name.
Right.
You know, you're not just going to be like
Mary Morris and she lives near Houston. The end. Like that's.
Yeah. And then how would somebody be able to find where this woman know where she works? Mm-hmm. How would they get her? Like, I still want to know how. I would just be so interested to know how Mary Lou, how did she end up 3 miles in the opposite direction? If what Jay's saying is true and she left for work. I'm starting to repeat myself now so we can wrap up. But I'm just saying, like, how do you, like, what happened between 6 and 10 a.m.? That caused her to not be on the way to work.
Right.
Because why would you stop? Unless you meant to stop.
Right, right.
Like, she's not just going to let, like her daughter even said, like, it would be weird for Mary to let somebody into her car, especially given the fact, like, she's in her passenger seat.
Right.
Which makes me think, God, maybe the husband did do something. And I hate to say that, but it just makes more sense to me than, like, it makes more sense that they were driving together and something happened than for her to be have driving and then she comes upon somebody else. Unless it's somebody she knows.
Yeah. Because why else? She's driving and then something happens where she's now in the passenger seat and someone else is driving her in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
How could that possibly happen unless it's someone she knows and trusts?
Yeah.
That's an interesting point, too.
Yeah. But you know what else?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the last thing I'm going to say.
Okay.
If you're a husband who wants to kill your wife, aren't there better ways to do it? Like, if you live with the person.
Yeah, but granted, if you're
trying to make it look like somebody else did it, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's wild, isn't it, Elaine?
That is wild. So hang on. So then Mary McGinnis's purse was found in Galveston?
No. Mary Lou's purse
was found in Galveston.
But like I said, her calling card
was in there.
But I'm told the family doesn't recognize the purse. But I don't know who said they didn't recognize it. But somehow her calling card ended up in that purse, whether it was hers or not.
Huh. Unless whoever did it. No, I don't know.
What?
Like, I was going to say stole some of her belongings, put them in their own purse.
Right, right. That's a possibility. But then why leave it in the parking lot?
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't make sense.
That's another thing her daughter said is, like, it didn't, like, why not throw it in a dumpster? Why put it in a parking lot where somebody could just, unless you're trying to throw somebody off.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What do people think of this? Let us know.
Mm-hmm.
143mysteries.com, Instagram at 143mysteries, Twitter at 143podcast, and YouTube. Find us on YouTube. I'm really trying to build up my YouTube, Elaine.
Awesome.
And yeah, it's going well so far, but yeah, I'm posting some shorts on there now.
Oh, cool.
At the end of my episodes, you know, I do my little thing with Skipper.
Yeah.
Skipper the kid. So I've started posting some little things of Skipper. Anyway, the YouTube is going to be for more if my listeners want to learn more about me and other things in my life. You know, all the podcast episodes are going to be posted to YouTube as well, but I'll have a little extra stuff on there. So you can find the description or the links rather in the show notes, and show me some love on YouTube. Damn it.
Yeah. I'm going to go check it out right after this.
You should. I'll send you the link.
Okay, yeah.
But any other thoughts on this, Elaine, before we call it a day? I feel like I've exhausted everything I think. And the answer is I just don't know.
Yeah, I'm in the same place as you. Very, very odd. There's so many different angles with this one. This was an interesting case.
Well, thank you as always for being here, Elaine.
Yeah. Of course.
You provide a great voice to these episodes. So
thanks.
Anytime. And with that, we'll see you next time. Stay safe, and we'll see you for the next episode.
All right.
One minute and 43 seconds is dedicated to my number one fan. Thanks, Dad. I love you and I miss you. This podcast has been approved by Skipper the Cat. Right, Skippy?